The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockler right back with you here for the final hour of the Hump Day 1st of March show at 710 KNUS. We're going to go to the VIP line right now. His name's Dave Koppel. He is an Independence Institute guy and knows guns. And frankly, the timing on me bringing him up was perfectly timed with whatever that cough was, Dave. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
I gave you no heads up. Now, the reason I wanted to bring you on and thank you for making time in your busy morning to do this was because the legislature has dropped, I think, the first four bills, and there's going to be more. There's going to be that semi-automatic bill at some point if it hasn't dropped already. But there's four bills they dropped within the last week that are all, according to them, designed to curb that broadly defined term gun violence, which includes everything from suicides to homicides to any other crime of violence that could take place with a handgun. Have you had a chance to look at these things, Dave?
I have. I'm working my way through them, and actually the sort of official rumor is that the House State Affairs will have a committee, will have a hearing on the waiting period bill tomorrow, Thursday, and so I've written testimony on that, and I'm working on things on the bill to sue all the gun companies so they go out of business. And then there's also a bill to restrict the rights of young adults, and I'll be doing something on that as well.
Let's talk about them in turn. We can start with the age one, and I guess I'll play the role of devil's advocate, which, of course, is Caldera's show, but and ask you, why not? What's the big deal? Kids that are 18, 19, and 20, they're numbskulls. They make a lot of bad decisions with guns. Aren't they killing themselves and each other right and left with these things? Why is this such a big deal?
Well, it is a high crime rate age, but you can say that for every year. I mean, if you wanted to raise the age to 35, you could definitely show data that shows people under 35 commit way more crimes than people over 35, and you can keep on going, and you can show that people under 70 commit more crimes than people over 70. So there's no stopping point on that. And the key point is the vast majority of people 18 to 20 years old are law-abiding, good American citizens, and they have constitutional rights that can't be taken away, period.
I think the other thing that troubles me about this is, having looked at the legislation, is they offer no data, no statistics, not even a reference to a single study like we see in the waiting period one. But nothing that would suggest that curbing the rights of 18 to 20-year-olds to legally purchase weapons will have an impact on the crime rate. Even if what you say is true, Dave, how many of those crimes are committed by firearms that those kids actually lawfully acquire? I don't think they have the numbers on it, but my guess is very, very small amount.
Very, very few. And remember, the burden of proof is on the government when this gets challenged in court. And besides that, according to what the Supreme Court said in the Bruin decision, the judge who hears cases on Second Amendment is not supposed to do some kind of interest balancing where the judge says, oh, well, the infringement's this big, the potential benefit of the law is that big, and this is how I'm going to balance them. That's not – the balancing was done by the enactment of our constitutional rights in the first place. And so there's not room left for balancing rights away, particularly prohibitory things like this that would prevent people from keeping arms at all.
I think, too, when there's two parts of this they think they're trying to solve. And again, all of these fall under the caption, do something, or like do anything. Like, oh, my God, we have to do something. It doesn't matter if it's effective or not, if it makes us feel good. But the other component of this was suicides. The tragedy that is youth suicide, even young adult suicide. So I did my own sort of questioning and looking around. And what I found was for Arapahoe and Douglas County, which make up about 18%+ of the population of the state of Colorado, almost one in five, somewhere between one in five and one in six, over a five-year period from 2018 to 2022, in Douglas County, there were five firearm-related suicides. Only one was with a weapon that that 18, 19, or 20-year-old owned. In Arapahoe County, there were eight firearm-related suicides over a five-year period, and only three could be traced back to firearms that these people actually own. So in two giant counties that make up a huge portion of the population, certainly of the metro area, if not the whole state, you have four cases in which, had these people been prevented from buying the firearms, it wouldn't mean they wouldn't have committed suicide, but it's at least something you could point to. I don't want to discount at all each of those lives. They are important. But we are long past the idea that if a law can save a single life or two lives or three lives, regardless of the infringement on constitutional rights, let's do it.
Well, yeah, because if you took that approach, then District of Columbia versus Heller would have come out the other way, because certainly a handgun ban could and does save lives in some cases. You know, the question is, does it end up taking more lives in other ways, because people can't protect themselves. But yes, any law might have some marginal gain, but that doesn't mean that it's constitutional to deprive an entire class of people of their rights.
I don't think this is a bill we can stop. I'm not even sure this is a bill we could amend on the way to it going to the governor's desk. Couple questions. I'm going to ask you to read some tea leaves here. One political, one legal. Politically, do you think that Polis signs this one into law? And two, the challenge that's definitely coming in court, how do you think it turns out? And is it a state challenge, a federal challenge? What does it look like?
Okay, here's my guesses. What got announced last week was something that had been negotiated in advance with the governor. And I've got no information on that. That's just my...
Makes sense, though.
It informed my speculation based on having been around Colorado politics and the state legislature since the 1960s. What got announced was something that he's willing to sign, and that was part of the various deal making that got worked out. For the challenge in court, the closest thing we've got is a decision from the Ninth Circuit from last spring, where California actually enacted something less drastic. It said 18 to 20-year-old young adults couldn't buy centerfire semi-automatic rifles. And the three-judge panel held that to violate the Second Amendment. Because, the Second Amendment begins a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. So one of the things you can tell from that is, at the very least, people in the militia have a right to keep and bear arms. And from the earliest days, colonial days, to the present, 18 to 20-year-olds have always been part of the militia. In fact, our state constitution, Article 17, says that they're part of our state militia. So I think the ban is on very shaky legal grounds, particularly if a court actually follows the Supreme Court's instructions and decides the case based on... saying the only gun controls that are permissible are those that are well established in the American legal history tradition or things that are analogous to such controls.
Billy has asked, how do you join the Colorado militia? I think he wants to join.
Well, you guess what? You don't have to do anything. You're in it already by our state constitution.
There you go, Billy. Congratulations. Go get your gun. There's no hat. There's a tricorn, but they're limited. Can we shift gears? We're talking with Dave Koppel from the Independence Institute. Let's talk about that waiting period one. They've come out and declared that there is a study, an unnamed, undated study, a study that suggests that a waiting period would decrease violent crime with handguns and firearms. What are your thoughts on that bill?
Well, it's pretty interesting that the bill cites that says a study says, but it doesn't tell you what the name of the study is. That's a really bizarre kind of drafting, I think. For my written testimony, which I'll submit tomorrow, I actually read the study.
Is it that Harvard one?
It's in a journal called Penis, P-N-A-S.
What? Well, where's that T-shirt?
P-N-A-S. You're right. The professors who wrote it are business professors at Harvard.
And what's your take on, one, the study, but two, on the bill and whether it'll work or not?
Well, one, if you believe the study, then we ought to repeal waiting periods. We ought to repeal background checks, because the study looked at waiting periods and at background checks and found, depending on how you run the numbers and which model you use, waiting periods either have no statistically, well, it's unanimous that waiting periods have no, sorry, the study by the Harvard business professors on all their models shows that background checks have no statistically discernible benefits. The vast majority of their results show background checks going in the direction of being harmful, like increasing homicides.
Really? How is that?
Yeah, and
how do they do that?
And some of the data show, some of their models show the harmful effects being at a statistically significant level. So if you believe this study, you should enact waiting periods and you should repeal background checks. Because the study does find large benefits from waiting periods. But I think that the study is completely implausible all around. According to the study, 1 out of 6 gun homicides in places that don't have waiting periods is perpetrated by someone who bought a handgun at a store within the past few days. Now, you've been a DA. You've had a lot of homicide cases.
Yep.
And seen others that your colleagues did. How often does that happen? Because according to the study, that's 1 out of 6 gun homicides.
So rarely. So very, very rarely. And I can tell you the big ticket ones would have been unaffected by this. Columbine, Aurora Theater, STEM, Club Q, Boulder. None of those would have been affected by a 3-day waiting period. Not a one.
And the same thing for the lesser things where it was a domestic homicide or a liquor store robbery, things like that. Would that be your experience?
Yeah, that's right. These guns, if they're not illegal, they're something that's been kicking around someone's house or their car for a while. I can't remember the last time we had a murder where someone went and bought the gun within days of committing the crime.
Well, according to this study, that's 1 out of 6 gun homicides normally. They say if you have a waiting period, you'll get a 17% reduction in gun homicides, which means, according to what they say, 1 out of 6 gun homicides is with a handgun that was bought in the past few days. And of course, that's ridiculous. We know from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, they do state-by-state reports on their gun traces, some of which are for crime guns. Other words are just like maybe the gun was lost and a law enforcement officer finds it. But they find that about 10... the time between when a gun was lawfully sold at retail versus when the police ask for a trace, the shortest period, they have about 10% of their total trace requests are for a gun that was sold at retail within the past 3 months. And that's 10%, according to ATF. And here, according to the bill, you've got 17% of homicides within 3 days of the gun being bought. It's preposterous.
Let's shift gears. We're talking with Dave Koppel from Independence Institute. I was thinking about the bill that now expands who can seek a red flag order against another Coloradans. Have you had a chance to take a look at that one?
I scanned it, but not studied it in depth.
Yeah, it's exactly what you think it is. The gist of it is that we took a bill where they swore up and down, it's only people who have an intimate knowledge of you, you know, that have lived with you, that have all this stuff. And they've now said, well, doctors and therapists and social workers and teachers and the attorney general of the state of Colorado, they can all do it, too. Well, thoughts on that?
I think my thoughts have always been that, and I've testified in both the Colorado legislature and in the U.S. Senate twice in favor of red flag laws and principles. but I say that they've got to have really strong due process protections, which the Colorado bill, the Colorado law does not. I think the proper approach is like what Connecticut has, which is anybody can go to law enforcement and say why they think there should be a red flag order, but the decision to seek one should be by a responsible law enforcement officer.
I agree with that 100%. I mean, you need somebody to screen these things for legitimacy at a minimum. The thought process that went into this, though, is a bit crazy. I'm trying to picture which teachers who, if you're in college, what do you get to see them once or twice a week for an hour at a time? Like, which teacher, based on what criteria, is going to feel comfortable going, hey, I got to miss school today. I got to go testify for a red flag law against student number X right here in the front row. I can't believe they want to be drug into this. And therapists. I mean, what therapist wants to sit there looking at someone who knows that if I say the wrong thing, this person might go and try to take away their rights? It's craziness. And to have the attorney general authorized to seek these things, and I realize by definition, law enforcement or the DA, it's just crack smoke crazy, man. What information could you have that would be of imminent nature that would support the idea that the court should intervene between someone and their Second Amendment rights? This is just another bill that's like, let's do something. At some point, man, they're going to expand this to anybody at any time without that gatekeeper that you talked about out of Connecticut. And someone you cut off in traffic is going to be able to go and make a complaint against Dave Copel. Not like it hasn't happened before, but you know.
Oh, sure. And then they when you have the bad bills, this happens. Like there was a here's a case, Massachusetts has a particularly bad law for due process. There was a guy who was a retired police officer who was working as a volunteer, like street crossing guard, at a school. And he noticed that the school's resource officer, you know, who's supposed to protect the students, was frequently absent. And so this retired guy, who, you know, after taking care of the school crossings in the morning, you know, was having a donut and a coffee at some diner someplace, and he said he was worried that because the school resource officer was so often derelict and absent, it made the school at risk of a mass shooting. Legitimate concern. And for saying that, the government got a red flag on the school crossing guard.
What?
Yeah. And of course this happens ex parte. You never get notice. You just have the police show up at your house saying, we're here from the government, and we're here to take all your guns. And so his guns were confiscated, and it took him months and months of going through the legal process to get them back, when they never should have been taken in the first place.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And that's why I think that you should allow red flag gun confiscations in emergencies when you show there really is an emergency. You know, the guy was talking today about attacking a school tomorrow. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, go in and
I left out a special nugget, by the way. The person that makes these complaints under the new law, the teacher, the therapist, or whatever, they can do it based on a quote-unquote interaction that has taken place as long ago as 6 months. Is the basis for going to seek this red flag thing. This has nothing to do with safety and everything to do with, we just want to get as many guns off the street as we can possibly get off the street. Let me shift to this last bill, and that's the one that you are working on right now, which is the Let's Sue All the Gun Makers Out of Existence bill. Tell us about that.
Sure. So the starting in the 80s and really getting amped up in the late 90s and early 2000s, the gun ban lobbies implemented plans to destroy the American firearms industry by suing it to death. And as they said, you know, we don't have to win the cases. Just the cost of litigation are going to be crushing. Because actually, the American firearms industry is fairly small. You could put the whole thing together, and you wouldn't have a Fortune 500 company. You know, it's less than $1 billion in total capitalization, I believe, which is less than you know, the chump change from Michael Bloomberg, compared to Michael Bloomberg, who's worth $74 billion. And so Colorado in 2000 and in 1986 and the U.S. Congress in 2005 enacted laws against these abusive junk lawsuits. They said if the firearms business, you know, a manufacturer or a store, complied with all the gun laws and sold a gun that functions properly. You know, it's not defective. It doesn't go off when you drop it, for example. If you sell a properly functioning firearm and properly obey all the gun control laws, then you can't be sued for doing that. This bill in the legislature would reverse that and say, no, you can basically be sued for anything if you don't think the manufacturer or the store had reasonable controls. And reasonable controls are never defined. You know, if you think more reasonable controls are needed on gun stores, then the legislature is perfectly free to enact those. But here they just have this vague standard that which basically allows anybody to be sued anytime and ultimately destroyed by the cost of litigation. And in fact, you can sue a business in, let's say, South Dakota in a Colorado court.
What?
Yep.
How? Because the gun made it from South Dakota to Colorado, or someone bought it online? How do they do that?
Exactly. The gun was, let's say, manufactured in Tennessee, sold to a retailer, sold to a gun store in South Dakota, lawfully sold in South Dakota, and later stolen from the South Dakota owner, and it made its way through the black market and was used in a crime in Colorado. You can sue the gun store in South Dakota.
The other part of this, and you've touched upon it, is it doesn't matter that there's some intervening act or some third-party thing. You can have done every background check in the world. You've never sold it to someone 18 to 20 years old after this law. You could have done everything right. But if some third party, let's call it a criminal, goes out and takes that gun and goes shoots up a bunch of people, you could be sued. And some folks might be thinking, yeah, but you would win that lawsuit. Maybe, but that's not the point. It is costly to be dragged into court and have to answer to this, and that's the point. It's not about them winning the cases. It's about throwing at their head and trying to get them to back out of the batter's box altogether. And the way to do it is to open up the doors and say, basically, you can be sued by anyone at any time for any bad thing that ever happens with your product. The problem is, we don't do it with cars and booze. You and I know, Dave.
And we don't do it with printing presses either. You know,
Right? Well, that's a good point.
You know, if somebody complains that the Denver Post libeled them in a newspaper article, you sue the Denver Post. But you don't sue the company that manufactured the printing press that
right.
The Denver Post uses. Presses in the First Amendment and arms in the Second Amendment are two man-made objects that are specifically protected by our Constitution.
Oh, that's a good point.
And you don't sue, and if you said that anybody who manufactures a press or an arm can get sued by the subsequent misuse of a third party, well, then that's the exact way to eliminate all manufacturers of printing presses and arms, and which is the point of the bill here.
That's right.
So previous things we were talking about, the advocates can at least make a straight-faced argument, even if it's not sincere, that they just want some new gun controls. They still support the right to keep and bear arms. This liability bill is a bill to eradicate the American firearms business. Period. End of question.
Does this thing pass? Does it get signed? And what happens in court?
My guess is everything that's in the legislature right now gets signed by the governor in terms of anti-civil rights, anti-Second Amendment legislation. A similar law was passed in New Jersey last year. A federal district court in New Jersey issued an injunction against it, plainly preempted by the 2005 federal law against abusive junk lawsuits.
Man, I hope that's true here. Thank you for being on the front lines of this fight, Dave Koppel from the Independence Institute. We'll be talking to you some more, especially as things develop with this. Reach out and let us know, man. You're going to be in the trenches. We're going to be way back here rooting you on.
Well, thank you. But I encourage listeners who have a point of view, you know, one way or the other, on any of the things they've talked about, they can still, in the legislature, you can testify remotely by Zoom if you sign up in advance, or you can go down and testify, and the legislature needs to hear from the public, pro or con, whatever your views
are. I agree, and they make it easy, and you can do it online and all that stuff, too. So,
yeah.
Dave Koppel, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, before we cut away for a break, and we'll come back and get your calls, we had a couple people calling in right now. What are you hearing about this, and what do you think? Maybe some of these things make some sense to you. Maybe we should be doing anything and everything to just save a couple young lives. I'm not sure. I don't want to sound heartless or inhumane. I'm happy to have this conversation, but please, 303-696-1971 is the number. We've got some texts as well. Let me just tell you about someone who is a champion for not just civil rights, but all your rights, and that's Dan Kaplis. This is a guy who for decades, and now with Babar Waheed for about the last 15 years, has been tearing it up in civil court, fighting for the rights of those who get hurt and injured. This is a guy who doesn't just talk the Constitution. He lives the Constitution. And that's something, God, I wish we had more public officials that did that. It wasn't just some prop or a reference point in a speech, but something that they actually embraced. Dan Kaplis is that guy. And Dan Kaplis is the guy that will stand up for your rights against the bigger, badder guy. It's the David versus Goliath thing. And honestly, Dan isn't David. You're David. Dan's the sling and the stone. And you whisk that thing around your head, you cut Dan loose, and Dan and Bobber fly through the air and strike Goliath right between the eyes, and it's game over. That's what they've been doing forever on behalf of the little guy who gets hurt by the big guy. Maybe it's the big insurance company covering up for some drunk driver. Or maybe it's the big insurance company covering for some commercial truck or some other vehicle out there that hurt you or a loved one. Get the stone, get the sling that matters. These are guys that win all the time on your behalf. They won't quit until you tell them to quit, or the other side cries uncle, and that just seems to be what happens more often than not. You can check them out online at dankaplislaw.com, C-A-P-L-I-S.com, Dan Kaplis Law, or you can call them at 303-770-5551, 303-770-5551. When we come back, your calls at 303-696-1971, your tube texts and your regular text, George Brockler, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here for the final 30 minutes of the show on Wednesday, 1 March. We are hump day, and now we're more than halfway through the show. Folks, that only leaves 2 days between us and a much warmer weekend than we're facing moving forward. Now, again, those things could change at any moment because, you know, weather. My thanks to Dave Koppel, wicked smart guy who's also a champion for civil rights and really does a nice job on the Second Amendment. And I do appreciate his call to action. Let me give you another one, by the way, a reminder. You know, we were down in El Paso, Texas last week, not just for the show part. And by the way, the feedback on the show, both in emails and text, has been phenomenal. And I'm so appreciative of the folks that really found it to be valuable. It was valuable for me, too. I'm glad I went down there. I'd only talked about the border like most of y'all, but going down there and seeing it, walking up to it, getting a sense of it, seeing the different kinds of border walls they are, and then also engaging with the people that are just coming across the border. And we did that in talking with the law enforcement officials. It was eye-opening. And I hope that you learned a bunch, too. If you haven't listened, go back and listen to the podcast. Deb did such a nice job. So did Stefan with their guests. That thing hasn't just been put to bed because we're no longer in El Paso. That thing is going on right now. I told you earlier that Denver has already released that since December, the 5,150 immigrants who have made their way through this broken broken sanctuary policy, asylum policy, have come up to Denver. Now, they say, oh, no, we're on our way to some other place. It's cost us $8 million already. Denver, $8 million for 2 months. 5,100 new people in Denver. Folks, this is a real issue right now. Whether we're in El Paso or up here, this is a big deal. And so I want you to do something. I want you to go to the 710KNUS.com website. Click on the banner, Colorado Undivided. And I want you to sign the petition. And also, man, say a secret little thank you to Steve Wells, who's going to be in studio with us tomorrow in the 9 o'clock hour. Steve is that Coloradan who stood up and said, I'm not, guy could go anywhere. Dude's earned a ton of money through all of his hard work. Guy could go and live anywhere he wants, but he's a Coloradan, and he's committed to making the state better. And this is one of many steps that he has taken. You saw his presence in the midterm elections. He's just getting started. And so he has helped us to put together that El Paso week. Phenomenal. We're going to talk to him about it tomorrow. Give him a thanks, but sign that petition. Send the petition to your friends. And now I think I've come up with something even nicer, and that is send the petition to a guy named Jared Polis. Hell, send the petition to the Attorney General, too, while we're at it. Let them know that you care and you want them to care, too. I don't know how successful it'll be, but I just know that doing what we're doing right now, which is just carping about it, that ain't going to get it done. Need to take action. And that's where Dave Koppel makes a lot of sense to me when he says, hey, folks, you got the time, you got the passion for this. Come down to the Capitol and give your testimony, even if it's 3 minutes. That's what Stefan's doing today on the safe injection site stuff. Even a show host is like, look, I'm going to take time off so that I can go do this. And he baked cookies for it. I don't even know if they'll let the cookies inside the Capitol, especially since he baked them in the shape of a gun. You can't do that, Stefan. I'm kidding. I don't know what the shape they're in. Probably the Padres logo or something dumb like that. Listen, get engaged. Easiest way to do it. Go to Colorado Undivided banner on the 710KNUS.com website. Sign the petition. Send it around. Done. Or do that and then go to the Capitol. Give testimony. Make a difference. Some of the texts that have come in here. Can you sue Louisville Slugger for bludgeoning somebody? That's a great question. I think the answer is no, you can't. But remember, their language is going to be reasonably foreseeable. I'd love to know how many people are hit with bats over the course of the country. Does that make it reasonably foreseeable? How about drunk driving? That's where I was going with Dave. You know, car manufacturers know that every year tens of thousands of people will pour themselves behind the wheel and drive in a way that creates risk to others and may even injure them or people inside the car. Do we ever tell car manufacturers you are going to be held liable unless you make your car safe from drunk drivers? Do we force them to have some sort of special technology in the steering wheel so that if they detect alcohol, it won't start? Or an intoxilizer built into the dashboard? No, we don't do that. Because what we say is the car isn't designed to go hurt people. It's designed to drive safely and get you from point A to point B. If someone misuses it, that's on them. That's what we should be doing. That's what we have been doing with firearms. How about the alcohol or weed makers? Every beer maker knows when they advertise on TV that folks are going to get behind the wheel drunk. It happens. How many people did we lose last year? Over 700 Coloradans lost to intoxicated driving. Do we hold the beer makers liable? Do we sue them and say, hey, you're not making your beer safer? We say, nope, sell as much alcohol as you can to the people over 21. And if they make bad decisions, well, that's on them. Why isn't that good enough for the gun manufacturers? And it's because guns have become hyper-political, and the lefties think they know how to control your life. And if they can take away guns from the law-abiding, remember, none of these laws apply to those who want to break the law. None of them. Because they get their guns somewhere else. They steal them. They ghost gun them. They borrow them from someone. Maybe they buy them off the street from some other person. I don't know. But I just can't remember the last time I had a case where somebody committed a murder or even an attempted murder with a gun that they had purchased within the last 3 days. And if you're 18, 19, or 20, I just don't remember those. It's not that they don't exist. I just don't remember them. Let me tell you something I do remember, though, before we get to the phone lines. Frank has called in, and some others are starting to call in at 303-696-1971. We've also got a bunch of texts. I'll get to those. I do want to address something with you, though, and that is that pain that you're dealing with right now. Listen, I'm at a place in life where every time I go to see my dad and his wife, and as you know, my mom passed away 25 years ago this past Sunday, there's some ailment that they're dealing with. And not in a whiny way, in a, hey, we're 80 and 82 years old kind of a way, and the warranty is long run out, and you got to go get replacement parts or put a bunch of duct tape or Gorilla Tape on whatever that is that's ailing you. You don't have to be stuck with joint pain, folks. You just don't have to shrug and go, well, that's what's getting old. Or, man, that's from an old injury. I guess I'll just have to suck it up and drive on. That's what Coloradans would do, right? At least the old generation of Coloradans. You would just stiff upper lip that thing and move on. You don't have to do that. Go see the doctor for sure. And if they tell you what the source of your joint pain is, shoulders, elbows, hips, doesn't matter, knees, they're probably going to tell you, here's how we fix it. We fix it with cutting into you through an orthopedic surgeon. And that's how they repair things. And I've said this now two times in the last 2 weeks when people have said, hey, I've got to go have my shoulder worked on. My first question is, have you considered QC Kinetics? Have you considered using you to cure you? Using you to fix that joint. That's regenerative medicine, folks. And QC Kinetics, man, they're the best at it. you can call a local health professional to discuss options right now. Now, you may end up deciding, no, I've decided I'd rather go through the long rehabilitation with the risk associated with being cut open by metal in some setting where it could get infected. I prefer that. Okay, you can still make that decision. But give QC Kinetics a call. If you're looking at the YouTubes right now, you can see 303-900-8986, 303-900-8986, and, of course, QC Kinetics, spelled with an X at the end, QCKINETIX.com. You can go there. But call the local people. Website's fine. That's informative. Call these local people and figure out a way to get lasting pain-free living with that injured or painful joint right now without surgery. 303-900-8986. Call them today. Start feeling better tomorrow. Let's go right to the phone lines here. Frank, you're on 710 KNUS. Frank, what do you think?
George, you know, the purpose of this call is to say and to confront the obvious. And the obvious is that small groups of loudmouth people that have been tutored and backed and counseled by certain shrewd lawyers are the source of a lot of this problem that we're seeing today. And it's never going to end until the opposition, our side, comes up with our shrewd lawyers with groups like, you know, the Independence Institute or some other institutes to fight this and to hold these people credible. I mean, you as a lawyer know that there's nuisance suits. I heard of one time. About a guy riding a bicycle down, and he it was going too fast, fell off the bicycle, hit the backside of a car, and sued the car manufacturer for having a sharp edge on the back end of this car. Well, that's a nuisance suit that should be thrown out before it ever gets to court. But the judge in those kind of cases are the ones who make the difference. And unfortunately, the judge pool has been polluted, as you know. And I think that even has to be taken to task and record made of the way some judges who are biased in their own political views, those people need to be brought to the surface and held to account. So it's never going to end until some good lawyers, I think, I'm not negating the role of the people, but some lawyers can confront some of these crazy things, both in Congress and local and the House legislature. And I've often said the way we make law should be illegal. Look at these people. They get a 1% majority, and they call it a mandate. Well, that's absurd. They get in there, but they abuse the system and run forth their political ideology to do whatever they want. And then, you know, the rest of the people just kind of sit back and let it get our system of freedoms get eroded. So it's a sad thing, but I guess my plea is for lawyers who are getting upset and incensed by the abuse of the system to use their knowledge to help counter, you know, some of these things, bring suits against these people, or hold their law license, the people that are doing this stuff. They're back there. They're just unknown. And I don't know how you hold the legislators accountable except to vote them out. But some of their crazy laws should track back to some of the things that they do.
Well, I wish there were liability for legislative efforts that turned into more crime or more injury. I do think there are things we can change with the civil system, Frank, including loser pays. That has its own downside, don't get me wrong. But we on the books have something like that, but judges never impose that. I mean, sometimes you can get costs back if you do something with a certain type of letter that you send them, a demand letter. But by and large, these frivolous lawsuits get to move forward with large impunity because the system is set up not to punish anyone for them. Well, and businesses just want to pay it off and keep making money.
Right. But somewhere there is the line in the sand between some lefties' political beliefs to shut down or try to shut down a gun industry-related industry through punitive and financial things versus this principle of right to make a living. And that has to be adjudicated.
I agree. Hey, Frank, as always, great phone call. Thanks, man, for listening. Thanks for sharing your wisdom with us. Listen, we're going to cut away for a break. It's going to be our last break, but not before I do something sweet for you, and that is to tell you, take a look around your house. take a look around your kitchen, right? That's the place where everybody congregates these days, not the dining room. In fact, I'm not even sure why they build new homes with dining rooms anymore. It's the kitchen. Take a look at that kitchen countertop. It served you well. Get a new one. It's time to upgrade your kitchen countertop and maybe even the countertops in your bathrooms. And if you're thinking about doing that to beautify the interior of your home, and by the way, if you just change that, you know everybody that walks in goes, whoa, 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 what's different here? Did you remodel the kitchen? You're like, nope, just the countertop. The wizard you go to is a guy named Mitch Flory with the Art of Granite. Now, the name says Art of Granite with a T. Don't be fooled. It's granite. It's marble. It's quartz. It's all and beautifully done. It's all the surfaces that you could want to have in a kitchen or bathroom countertop. And here's the deal. Guy says if you just tell him or his staff, and he's always there, by the way, that you listen to 710 KNUS and The George Show, you get 20% off of labor. Hallelujah, man. 20% off of labor? Or you get a new sink with those kitchen countertop packages. How can you beat that? Plus the quality craftsmanship and the customer service. This is a guy who isn't just looking to do a hit and run. He's looking for word of mouth business after that. And frankly, when you're ready to upgrade the other rooms with your countertops, that you're going to call him as well. So write down this number or just read it into your phone. 303-386-5919. 303-386-5919. That's Mitch's phone that rings. Not the business phone, his phone. And you can check them out at theartofgranite.com. That's with a T, theartofgranite.com. When we come back, I'll get through the texts, any calls that there are at 303-696-1971. It's George Brockler on The George Show. You're listening to 710 KNUS. But only for a short period of time here, I've just talked my way with you. Here's someone, Frank, if you're listening. Frank is spot on. Great text. Reasonably foreseeable that marijuana tour bus will result in injury. I feel the same way. That's a great longtime listener there because we covered that thing earlier in the show. Absolutely right. How do you not sue the marijuana people for that? We want to outlaw guns but promote drugs and drug abuse. With great freedom comes great responsibility. Thank you there, Superman. Libs don't want the U.S. to have responsibility. They want to control us from the top down. It's corporate bureaucracy and un-American. Libs are naive and dangerous. It's more than that. Because remember what they've done over the last two sessions? They have legalized the possession of firearms by convicted drug dealers and car thieves who we know are tied to violent crime. Now, think about that. They have said through that legislation, we trust them more than we trust law-abiding 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, people that have proven by their conduct. And by the way, to become a convicted felon, it's got to be repeated. I'm just telling you, that's how the system works. We trust those people more than we trust 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. More than we trust my son, Trey, and my daughter, Amanda. That's what they said. Oh, there's one more. There's another bill. There's a bill to make a gunshot wound de facto serious bodily injury for purposes of enhancing a criminal penalty for something like assault or attempt murder or whatever it is, right? The Dems are going to kill that bill. They do not want a gunshot wound to be. So who are they protecting with these laws? They're not looking out for us. They don't sit down with any of these bills and say, how can we make life better for the law abiding? Instead, all they say is, how can we protect the offenders? How can we keep guns in the hands of those who are less likely to follow the law and keep them out of those who are most likely to follow the law? Where and when can I go testify? The Colorado legislature does not care about our rights. That's true, too. Listen, hey, great 4 hours with you. My thanks to Dave Koppel. My thanks to Dave. Let's go, Brandon Williams. We're going to have more guests on tomorrow and Friday, hoping to get Tina Peters, maybe some Dick Wadhams in there, maybe some mayoral candidates. You stick around. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.